We're about to have a conversation with A-Rod Womack. He's a man about town. Many people know who he is. He's been a businessman, entrepreneur of all kinds. He's got a degree in philosophy from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He's a lover of WEAA and many other things in life, and he's written this book called Redwood, based on a true story, Celebrities, a Serial Killer, a Con Man, and a Crew, and a Great Cuisine, served with a glass of Grenache and a touch of sex. Look out.
That's a mouthful.
It is, man. That's a hell of a subtitle.
Right.
Well, good to see you, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm well. I'm well, and thank you.
And for those who don't know, who are maybe younger or just moved to town, the Redwood Grill, Redwood belongs to, it was a restaurant a long time standing before you bought it, and he turned the Redwood into this spot that for this period of time in life was like
the spot,
one of these spots in town, right?
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah.
What was the name of the restaurant before it was there?
It was interesting because it was a couple of different things. Before we bought it directly, it was the Redwood Grill. We didn't change the name.
Okay.
Before that, it was Marshall's, the nightclub.
Marshall's, that's right.
Before that, it was a Cadillac Grill. Yeah. So there's some interesting history about it. It was actually the first Cadillac dealership in Baltimore was right there at that location. And it still has the original Cadillac emblems there.
Right,
so
right.
It burned down during the Great Fire, and then it was rebuilt. And when it was rebuilt with a marble bar. And that marble bar was still standing because, you know.
Is it still there?
It's still there. It's still there. The Redwood, the restaurant itself is still there, of course, not as the Redwood Grill.
Right. So how this was an unusual move on some levels because there weren't many black men or women who had restaurants in the heart of downtown in the 90s, right?
Yeah, that's such a good point, and I'm glad that you brought that up because, honestly, even though we were proud to be, you know, an African-American-owned restaurant that was right down by the Inner Harbor, it's really sort of a sad commentary for a city that's majority African-American to you know, and even today, think about it. If you want to set out to go to a black restaurant downtown Baltimore right now, where do you go? So, you know, the situation hasn't gotten much better from an entrepreneurship standpoint in terms of how our city is you know, sort of matriculating and moving forward. But at that time, yes, we were. And we sort of created something down there, a lot of synergy, because at that point, you got to remember, this is prior to PowerPoint. This is prior to Harbor East.
Prior
to the big box restaurants that moved in.
Right.
You know, so it got dark. It got dark, you know, in Baltimore downtown, and then people pretty
literally.
Much left. It literally got dark.
Right,
yes,
right,
literally.
Right.
And so when we came in, it was like that little light on Calvert Street, and people started coming because it was like we started drawing them because there's nothing else to do anyway. So now is a reason to stay a little longer after work, you know. And then Larry Stewart's came 3 months later, and that really created some synergy.
So point aside, what time did it open up? Trying to remember.
Well, the grill opened for lunch.
Right, but then you opened it at night, though.
Yes, and then we didn't close. We'd stay open for happy hour, and then we'd open at night only on like Wednesday through Sunday. We'd open at night. And generally attracted, you know, at first it was just crowds of folks who just for the nuance, you know, they wanted to see this new restaurant at three. And by the way, my partners, Edwin Avent and Cleveland Jared, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have been able to open the restaurant. But they wanted to see this new restaurant open up, and come and enjoy the food and see what it was all about. And so we did create a lot of synergy there in the beginning.
And so these two at Cleveland Jared, they're still with us?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I thought so.
Yeah, because Edwin went on about Heart and Soul magazine, and down is the network.
That's right. He was my business partner.
Yeah.
But you really created a spot that people can just come eat in. I mean, it became this magnet of, like, celebrities were in town and they were doing a film or doing theater, whatever. They ended up at the Redwood Grill. I mean, all kinds of people ended up at that spot.
They did. A lot of that just had to do with where we were located. You know, so logistics. The
Gene
Maryland
Hackman
film
ended up there one night.
Yes. Due to Maryland Film Commission, we had some relationships. So yeah, and Gene Hackman's folks contacted us, said, "Look, Gene wants to do a private fight party for the Mike Tyson fight when he fought Holyfield."
Right.
That's how long ago it was. I can't believe it. Much time has flown by. Right. But yeah, so we and then the book goes into an amazing story of how we pulled that off because we had no cable at the time. There were no satellites on top of buildings for downtown.
So how did you pull it off in 10 seconds?
You got
more than that, but you know, how did you pull it off?
But real quick, 5 seconds. we actually got some folks to climb on a neighboring building, of which we did not have permission to get on top of. We were able to get a satellite dish up there. We were able to run it down literally about maybe 10 minutes before Gene Hackman walked in the restaurant. We got it to come on and work. And we've been working on it for like 2 weeks. It was just all kinds of challenges, but that's a nickel tour of it.
I love that. I love this. That's why the book is so much fun, because you really had a good time with this restaurant.
We did, yeah. And but see,
and it was also a lot of work.
It was a lot of work, man. And see, so what I try to present here is a couple different angles, and it really is a body of interesting. Different sort of perspectives that are all coming together in this kind of soup called the Redwood, called Redwood. But what happens is I try to keep it real, Mark. I try to show people first. It's an entrepreneurial book at the heart of it. It's an entrepreneurial book. It's for, I'd say, anybody who's interested in going into business and you've never been in business before, especially if you're thinking about opening a restaurant business, which a lot of people want to do, read this book, okay?
You'll because have no idea what something. It means.
Right.
How
they
hard
don't.
It is.
It is hard. And so I talk about the tough times and the things we went through, and I talk about the good times, you know? So you're going to get both sides of the restaurant business, the allure of it and what attracted us to it, what attracted me to it, and also the dark side of the restaurant business. We saw a lot of that, and we felt a lot of that in this experience.
So a part of it, I mean, and there were so many colorful pieces of this. One is Nabil. His name, right? Wow. Did I say his name right?
You got it right.
Right?
Yeah.
The your chef?
Yeah. Shorty.
Who was good. Shorty
yeah,
was good.
Shorty was good.
He was a good cook.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, but. But four. he had a trickle or two of blood on his hands.
There was part of his resume that you didn't see when you hired him.
Exactly. It's funny that you mentioned Nabil. I'm going to tell you something, man. A lot of people miss that character when I'm doing these interviews.
Really?
They do. But to me, Nabil is one of the characters.
Part of the heart of it.
He's part of the heart of it.
Right,
you know, I shouldn't be surprised that you picked that up. But the fact is, yeah, he was part of the heart of it. And what I was trying to really convey by bringing his character to light in the book is that although if you look at a busser, you look at a dishwasher, a lot of people, and when you look at a totem pole in the restaurant business, you know, a lot of times the bus and the dishwasher is at the bottom, right? But I wanted to elevate his character for a bunch of reasons, you know, that had a lot to do with his own morality and his own ethics and then how that impacted the story. I just thought it just meant a lot. And then when you understand more about Nabil and where he's from and then how it is like, you know, I had to write about it.
You want to tease a little bit of it for people who haven't read the book yet? I mean, this is he committed serious crimes.
The Shorty, you mean? Not Nabil.
I mean, Shorty.
Yes, Shorty.
I'm not mean to cross the
yes,
two.
Yes, that's all right, yeah.
But Shorty committed serious crimes.
Shorty did. And, you know, I'll share, you know, this much. Certainly the subtitle, you know, shares at least that much, that there's a serial killer involved. This is a true story. And I tried to make it as true as I possibly could without embellishment. What happened is, in a nutshell, is we found out one day after some federal authorities rolled up on the restaurant that they were searching for him. Now, at that point, by then, he had been our chef, our head cook for years, okay? But by that point, he was kind of on the run. He had already left, and he left unexpectedly. And they rolled up, and they were like, we're looking for him. They didn't say why. We didn't even find out till later, till after he was eventually caught, why they were looking for him. And when we found out, it was way worse than we could have ever imagined.
I know, just imagine. You had those people, some of the people working for you could have been a victim of his.
Absolutely. And if you read through, what you'll see is, you know, I dropped little pieces here and there just because I did spend a lot of time with him. And we did talk a lot. And what's interesting is his background. You know, when you look at, he came from West Baltimore. He had a mother who was a prostitute and a drug addict. And he came from a very dark place himself and grew up in, you know, a very tough sort of situation. Never knew his dad. He had a lot of pent-up anger and so he was really troubled.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about, because I was thinking about this in the book, because I always hear everybody's talking about, you know, a lot of young people talk about wanting to be entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Right? And I think people have a real skewed notion of what that means. I applaud anybody who thinks about wanting to create their own business, create their own work. And that's an impulse that we have, especially in this society, people want to do that in this American culture. But people don't understand what it takes to do that. And it's not something, yeah. You know, it's not like something you just, oh, I'm going to start a business.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It shouldn't be impulsive, at least. I know some people go into it impulsively. In the book Redwood, I do talk in the beginning about how I led into becoming an entrepreneur. And for me, it started very, very young. I started my first business while I was in college at 18. I sold it at 23, and it did well. It was a landscaping company, and I knew nothing about landscaping. So for me, it was kind of luck, you know, hard work, but luck too, right? And luck has something to do with all of it.
Always.
So just,
right.
You know, I always preface it by saying that, you know, so you hope for really good luck. But anyway, so I've always had like this entrepreneurial spirit. What I would advise to any young person, though, especially young people listening, want to go into business and become an entrepreneur, first and foremost is, you know, think about whatever it is you want to go into business. Study it. Study the business. Study, you know, your competition. You know, go into it with a business plan. You know, I made the mistake early on of not, you know, creating a business plan. It's one of the things I did not do with the Redwood Grill when we bought it. You know, we just had an opportunity. We purchased. We moved on it. You know, I wish that I had more time to sit back and really have a constructive business plan to help us navigate through that process. So I would say start with that.
I mean, the business was 2-3 years?
We were in business for 3.5 years.
3.5 years.
Yeah.
And so there are all kinds of reasons why you talk about how the business fell apart at the end. And
yes.
Shorty being part of it and Moore being part of it. But
yeah.
But he wasn't a big part of why.
He wasn't a big part of it. No.
But so, I mean, as you reflect on that, what does that say to you? I mean,
well, let's talk about that for a minute, because here's the deal, and it's important to understand. We had a very successful run. There were times when people waited an hour to get into the Redwood Grill, especially for dinner.
It was a spot, man.
You know,
right.
And it was really hot. So then we went through this thing, and then these big box restaurants started opening. So part of it was competition. Remember, Cheesecake Factory wasn't there when we opened. 2 years later, they opened. We would literally see our Friday crowd go from jam-packed, people waiting an hour, to maybe a year later when it was barely packed. And then we'd wonder why. And we're like, nothing's really changed at the grill. But we'd go down when the Cheesecake Factory opened. We'd literally send someone down, or we'd go ourselves and see some of our same customers waiting in line at the Cheesecake Factory for an hour. So part of it is just the dynamic of change and how it impacts business, especially the restaurant business. That was one thing. Second thing is momentum drift. I think that what and there's a chapter I write about in momentum drift.
Right.
So there's, you know, there's things that can happen in a restaurant business. Lots of them I could talk about. We don't have enough time. But that happened to lots of other restaurants around. We had to adapt a little bit because our demographics started changing. We had this sort of business, young professionals, buppies, if you will. They were coming to the restaurant at first, but it started to become more of a lounge. And we just noticed we started getting more of the hip-hop kind of crowd. We had to still survive, so we accommodated to them. We started doing hip-hop night. We got with 92Q and Butterman and JB, bless his soul, he's dead now.
Right.
But we got with them, and we had a super successful run with that. So the restaurant itself started to change. But then in the end, a big fight happened, and I write about that. And that changed the grill, I think, forever, and it sort of changed the way we were looking at our business forever.
And in some ways, I mean, it was such a beautiful run, but in some ways it was, as I felt reading your book, was that, I mean, it was almost time, given what it had gone through and how the business had evolved and evolved into. It was almost time for something to shift.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think one of the big lessons, a big takeaway for anyone who's going to go in the restaurant business, you know, and there's another, I'm not going to mention the name of it, but there's another restaurant, African-American owned restaurant that opened fairly recently, about 2 years ago. Within 6 months, they went through momentum shift. So they actually changed from a restaurant to more of a club. I'm telling you now, once that happens, you're almost for sure doomed as a restaurant.
Why is that?
Because now people get confused. Your clients get confused about what you're doing. So if you had any hope of capturing for long term this patron base for a long period of time, once you shift it to something else, so you become a lounge or a nightclub, and I'm coming just to have dinner with my wife or, you know, my significant other.
Different atmosphere. Different
it's a different atmosphere. So now I'm turned off. I watched it happen. And so my advice to anyone who's going into that business, if you're going into the restaurant business, know all the factors that you need to know to keep that business working as a restaurant. Because if you have to change it, that means you're probably doing something wrong or something's happened that it's out of your control.
Now, I you know, the part of the story is also the kind of fun you all had and the crazy stories from inside the restaurant.
Lots of it.
You know, whether it was the mild stories of Tyra Banks walking in with your partner, I think, if
yes,
I remember
Edwin,
right?
Yes, yes.
With Edwin. Because she was still a model then.
She was still doing her thing, man. She was a supermodel.
Right.
She was very much a supermodel. That blew my mind. But we had so many incidents like that. There was a time when a limo pulled up, and literally Halle Berry, Wesley Snipes, I want to say Denzel. I believe that's what I wrote. If Denzel was in it. Yeah.
Right, we're all
in the limo, and someone had told them about the grill. They were coming from a movie premiere in D.C., and they got there, and we were closed because it was a Wednesday night.
Oh, bummer.
And tell me about it. Edwin happened to be there just taking some. So when they knocked on the door, Edwin was there, and it was raining, and he said, dude, you won't believe this, but a limo pulled up, and this is who's in it. And, you know, he's calling around trying to see if we can get a cook. It just didn't work. But, yeah, we had a bunch. But lots of really, really cool experiences. Look, we were young men. We weren't married. And, you know, let your imagination run. But I will tell you, we had a lot of good times.
Well, look at your subtitle, man. What's it end up with?
Sex.
Serve with a glass of Grenache.
Yes,
and a touch of sex.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, listen, I had to keep it real and let folks know that this book had, you know, some very interesting parts. The story of Redwood had some very interesting dynamics and you know. I actually toned it down a little bit.
You had to do that, man.
I had to.
I mean, and what I will say is that back in the day, this is when wine was just coming into play for most people. And people now everybody loves wine, or I do, and people understand wine more. But then, you know, Grenache was like, you know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah, yeah. And we served a lot of wine. Yeah, right. We served a lot of wine. You know, one of the biggest events we did was the Will and Jada event the night before. The night before they got married at the Cloisters. And they had contacted us because Will was invited by Gene to his party that he did at a restaurant. I didn't even know Will Smith was coming because he didn't disclose a guest
list. Jada's a Baltimore person.
Yes, right. Yes. But right. I didn't know Will was going to be at Gene's party. So Gene invites him, and a bunch of other celebrities were there, you know, Drew Hill and all these other people. So anyway, it was very intimate. Anyway, about a month later, 2 months later, we get a call, and it was from one of Will Smith's top people. And he said, look, Will had a good time at your spot. He wants to do something for Jada the night before they get married. And, of course, I'm like tickled pink. I'm like, what? Are you serious? You know? So, of course, we did it. It was a very, very nice event. It ended with a twist. I don't know if you remember that part it ended with a very strange.
You don't want to tell the twist now.
I'm not going
to tell
it. I want them to read the book. But a very strange and interesting twist at the end of that event. But the event was amazing. Will and Jada, two very, very classy
they really are.
People.
There we are.
They are.
Jada was one of my students at School for the Arts.
Oh, really?
Yes. But I wonder, you know, just thinking about this now, that when you think about that moment that you wrote about, and it's a really exciting little piece that you've, not so small, it's a good book, about how you, even though we get older, how you leave that glitter and the excitement of running a place with all these multi-level stories and the food and the chefs and the wine and the celebrities coming in and out of Baltimore, inside the place. And, you know, and A-Rod Womack, you know, it's like a name. You know, he's got the spot downtown. I mean, you got to go to his spot. You know what I'm saying? And that changes. How was that for you, that getting that change?
It's funny that you ask that because one day I remember sitting down having a conversation with a movie star who's been in a bunch of things, okay? Michael T. Williamson, I can say his name. So Michael T. and I were sitting at my bar talking about how, you know, what it feels like when you're in a situation where, you know, you've got all this fame, but then you don't have it. Because we got into that conversation because he was describing a situation to me. And what's interesting, I didn't really understand what he was trying to convey to me until later, until I was sort of out of the restaurant business. What I felt like was, no, we weren't famous. It wasn't like that. But we did have a lot of popularity, you know.
Yes,
and so
right.
It was a little tough, you know, after you've been in a situation where you've had so much limelight and then you don't have that limelight. And then it's not just that you don't have that limelight, but it's like you don't have, you know, like the way the business ended. So it wasn't just not the limelight. So it's more than just that. So it did hit a little hard.
Because it must have felt, I mean, what happened to you felt a little abrupt.
It was. It right? was. Yeah, it was. And I think that, you know, especially for me and my personality, I think that, you know, I'm probably a little more than maybe most people drawn towards that kind of limelight. I just, you know, that's just the truth. I just am. So it did. But what happens is, you know, there's a maturity process, too, that starts to take place. And I think that over the years, I started to mature and just look at life a little differently. And I've done so much since then. You know, I just got back from Nairobi, Kenya. I've been all over. I've been traveling. I've been really? Doing a lot. Oh, yeah. I had an amazing, amazing experience there. Got a chance to share the book, but also was there working with some missionary folks. We support some schools and orphanages there. And I wanted to see where the money was going. And I was really just impressed with the amount of work that's being done. But anyway, but since then, you know, I've been in the development business. I've ran the food nutrition department for Baltimore City Schools.
Which you did, right?
You
right.
know, which, you know, from that vantage point, at least, my next book will come out
called
Central Office, yes, as a novel. But it will deal with some of those experiences as a novel of Baltimore City Schools. Yeah.
So you have an event coming up soon, which is March the 25th, right?
The 25th of March at the Enoch Pratt Public Library, Cathedral Street.
6:30.
The Enoch Pratt is doing an author's event
In the Poe Room.
Second floor, I believe, in the Poe Room. So I'm really excited about that. That's going to be a really nice event. I'll be speaking a little, reading from the book, and I'll also be signing a book. So come on through if you're not doing anything on March 25th, and we'll...
Got to check that out.
Absolutely.
Got to check that
out. I'm looking forward to it.
A. Rod Womack, Redwood, based on a true story. It is a true story. It was the spot in town in the mid-90s. Redwood is a book that really, he poured himself into this book, and it's got so many cool stories in it and also things to learn. So it's called Redwood, based on a true story. Celebrities, a serial killer, a con man, and a great cuisine served with a glass of Grenache and a touch of sex by A. Rod Womack.
Absolutely. And they can find it, by the way, anywhere and everywhere. Barnes & Nobles, Kindle, Amazon, Nook. It's all out there. So, yeah, definitely.
Always good to see you, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We're about to go to break here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And on our way to break, we're hearing the Ballad of John and Yoko by the Beatles. John Lennon and Yoko Ono were married on this day in 1969. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com.